Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn and visit the website dsmsports.net. And, of course, get other episodes of the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher Radio. Well, really excited for today's show. A sport that I have not delved into enough. We're going to be talking today to Paul Dewhurst, who's with the MLS, specifically the San Jose Earthquakes. He's a digital marketing strategist for them. And it's really cool, really fun to kind of go inside the organization for an MLS club and how they go about building their brand out there in San Jose. Before getting into the conversation with Paul, we have this episode's helpful tool. And so this helpful tool is a tool that makes it easy to create mobile-friendly, interactive PDFs, basically like brochures or programs, and it's called Flow Paper. I had to use it recently, and it was pretty user-friendly, very easy to set up, and is indeed user-friendly, or mobile-friendly, rather, that is, and it allows you to put together a digital brochure, whether it's a collection of JPEGs, or maybe it's a PDF, and you want to add JPEGs to it, and really just customize something, or you have a ready-made PDF and need somewhere to host it in a friendly manner. This is a site for you. That's what I used it for, was to create a brochure and then make it easily viewable on mobile, in this case in our apps, but you can do it for mobile web as well. And that's what it's all about, of course, is how can you make things like that more mobile-friendly? A lot of clubs, teams out there are already creating, you know, spending money and creating these mobile-friendly digital programs and using sites like Issue or, you know, obviously more specific sites for that purpose as well. And this is an easy kind of homemade way to do it yourself to create that digital program, especially helpful for maybe smaller schools, smaller teams. And I definitely enjoyed using it myself. So nothing too fancy. Give it a go. If you have a PDF or want to create a digital brochure or program or what have you, give it a go. It's called Flow Paper, flowpaper.com. And you know, I think you'll enjoy it. All right, that's episode's helpful tool. We'll be right back to have our chat with Paul Dewhurst, digital marketing strategist for the San Jose Earthquakes. All right, back to this episode's helpful tool, and I'm really psyched to be joined by someone today who I've gotten the pleasure of getting to know recently. I'm really talking today to Paul Dewhurst. He is the digital marketing strategist for the San Jose Earthquakes in the MLS. And welcome to the podcast today, Paul.
Neil, thanks for having me. How's it going?
Good, good, good. We're looking forward to talking a little footy, talking a little soccer, football, however you want to call it. And I know the MLS kind of struggles with it sometimes. There's some FCs, some SCs. We're going to go into all things Earthquakes, talk about how you do what you do there with the Earthquakes, wearing a lot of different hats. I know there's never a dull minute, and we're psyched to be talking to you in the middle of the season. But before we get into the meat of our discussion, Paul, want to get to know you a little bit. So tell us about, you know, your career path and how you got into your role today. Any tips for folks that want to do what you do?
Yeah, definitely. So just to start off, I went to Cal State East Bay, played soccer there for 4 years, had played all my life. And to kind of get into the industry, I got an internship with NBC Sports Bay Area, which is a regional sports network, started in PR and helped write press releases and helped on the marketing side a little bit. From there, and I was still in college at the time, senior year got an internship with the Earthquakes in PR, nonetheless, and then had a year there and also did some digital cross work as well with the club. And then from that point, there was an opening for a digital marketing strategist with the club, and they thought it would be good to interview for it. And kind of that's where I started with the club. And from there, we've grown tremendously, and we kind of made a nice mark for the Quakes in the Bay Area, and kind of been there ever since.
And I think you've seen, maybe you picked up on this a little bit when you were starting out with PR with the club, that it's definitely an evolving part of the industry where, you know, PR is very much aligned with digital, and digital, whether it's PR based or marketing based, there's no doubt a bit of marketing to it because you're reaching fans, you're able to engage fans, you're getting them on your site. And so did you kind of understand that early on? Were you, because I mean, obviously coming up in with PR, you're writing press releases, you're writing game notes, and what was that transition like to go from a PR place to a marketing place? Or did you kind of have a good understanding from spending the time in that role to begin with?
I think a little bit of both. I had a good understanding to begin with, but having a PR background definitely helped me in some of the decision making and some of the content we push out based off of what I did in PR. And I think a lot of those things, like you said, kind of go hand in hand. And there are some times when you have to be smart on social media and, you know, in digital. And I think some of that PR mindset kind of comes to mind as well. But I think definitely that PR background helped me in terms of writing, in terms of storylines, just perspective, and kind of knowing the fans and what they want. And I think that kind of helped me, it kind of ignite my career in digital. And, you know, it's kind of helped me ever since. And I always relate, kind of go back to some PR tips that I learned back when I started to kind of help me through content ideas and kind of initiatives we're doing throughout the season.
And I want to kind of touch on, too, the skills that you have. Because, I mean, just having gotten to know you and talk to you, you have a pretty good diverse skill set. And that doesn't happen overnight. Did you kind of, and when you were in school, when you were doing internships, maybe with the time you spent with NBC Sports, did you kind of realize that I need to be a five-tool player? I need to be able to learn a little bit of web design, a little bit of video, a little bit of writing. Like, how did that skill set, how cognizant were you, and how did that help you kind of get that job with the Quakes?
Yeah, for sure. And it's something I kind of work on every day. And it kind of started with, you know, I was a sports editor in college for, you know, the Pioneer newspaper at my university. And from there, my dad and brother are actually professional photographers and videographers. So I kind of had this kind of skill in my blood, if you will. And I kind of worked on that as well. And then at digital social media initiatives there as well. So I kind of do a lot in terms of writing, shooting video, taking photos, and, you know, the social media aspect, managing that, as well as the website. You kind of wear a lot of hats, especially in MLS, and I know a lot of people in this industry can attest to that. And it's definitely been a good experience to be so versatile. And I feel like I bring a lot to the table. And in the past couple of years, it's, you know, having these Photoshop skills now, and you know, Adobe Premiere, and having cutting video. It's pretty interesting. And my path has been kind of a windy, long one, but I think it's been a good one where I can say, yes, I can do multiple things, whatever you need, I can do. And I think I can, you know, attest that to being a part of MLS and the growth of the league and the digital realm, you know, in itself.
So you can play midfield, you can play striker, you can play back, center back, goalie, you can do anything you need.
Wherever the coach needs me, I come off the bench, you know, get that late stoppage time goal, whatever you need, coach.
So tell me about when, obviously you kind of didn't transition into the digital marketing strategist role, but started out there. Was there a digital marketing strategist before you got that job? And kind of where was digital and social for the Earthquakes, you know, when you did start with the club?
So there was before. She left Olivia Caron. She left to an agency in San Francisco. She did some good stuff with the club and really gave, in my opinion, kind of gave birth to our voice and our presence. She moved on, and I kind of stepped in at that time. But I think all in all, the club to begin with, we were. It took us a little time to kind of get into creating a presence on Twitter, Instagram, and I know our PR had a lot of say in what we did on Twitter for a lot in like 2010, 2011, 2012. So it took some time. I feel like I came in at a perfect moment, kind of in the club, in the Bay Area, just to build our digital presence. And I know Instagram started to take off, as well as, you know, Twitter and the relevance of all this. It was definitely a good time. I'm kind of blessed to be able to have that opportunity to build kind of what we have today. But yeah, I think there was a base, and for my 3.5-4 years with the club, we've definitely built on that and kind of created what we have today.
And I know in some clubs, you know, the digital and social kind of falls under marketing, others it falls under PR, others there is a fully dedicated digital and social arm, I guess. Is your supervisor a VP of marketing, VP of PR? Is there a VP of digital or exec at that level? What's that infrastructure look like?
Yeah, so for the longest time, we had a VP of marketing, Amanda Farina. She was fantastic. She did so much for the club, building us kind of grassroots as well as digital. So I would report to her for a lot of the time. She recently left, and because of her departure, we had some restructuring in the marketing/communications department. We brought in Michael Bobian. He's now our director of digital. and now he kind of gives us more of someone we can come to with direct digital questions, concerns, and that's kind of his sole purpose, his focus. So we have that, but above Michael is a VP of communications and marketing, who is Jed Meddy, who oversees both kind of the PR communication side as well as digital marketing, kind of grassroots marketing, and the video creative side. Mm-hmm. So we kind of all sit in under this big umbrella, and that is, you know, digital marketing, the marketing grassroots, and communications and creative services, which is video and all that stuff. So we're kind of a big family. I don't think we are distinctly our own digital realm, but right. I think we're kind of getting more and more towards that, especially, you know, with the prominence of digital these days.
No, it definitely, I'm sure, helps almost. I mean, it's a combination, I guess, of blessing and a curse that you have to have your hands in so many things in your role, and it does touch different parts of the organization. And I know, like, you know, I'm sure working with your boss and your teams there, that you are developing content that is used on across platforms. I know it's interesting to look at how some clubs, you'll have a dedicated social person, and maybe that person has some Photoshop skills, some After Effects skills, and doing a little bit what they can to produce for Instagram stories, for Facebook and whatnot. And then you might have someone else that's producing for the print marketing, for the email blasts, for the website marketing and web ads. But it seems like you probably have your hand in a little bit of everything. And I'm curious as to how that probably helps, the fact that you know what's resonating on social and can take that same knowledge to email, to other places that you guys are doing digital marketing. And do you see that play out, or is it really you have to treat each platform on its own, and you know what works on social media may not work in email or in web or you know, wherever else you're putting your digital advertising?
No, I think you hit it right on the head. Some stuff for us does not work the same on certain platforms. Maybe what we put out on email doesn't have the same effect or impact as what we put out on, you know, our social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter. What's great about our group, every week we meet for a kind of a weekly content meeting. We probably have two a week. Monday we kind of sit and kind of regroup and see what we can do for the week to come. But Wednesday is our day really where we have the creative services, we have digital, we also have grassroots, we have PR, all sit in a room and talk about where we all are at and how we can create some content that really resonates with our fans and will be effective and for what platform. So I think we found a nice groove in doing that. And mm-hmm. from that, we've identified what works maybe on Twitter or Facebook rather than something different on Instagram that may be more effective. So I think in the past couple of years, we've done that successfully. And I think we've definitely seen the results.
Oh, that's good stuff. And I mean, obviously, the idea of what works and what doesn't work is such a fungible definition. I think everyone kind of has their own definition at times. And I'm wondering how you guys decide with your limited time, with limited resources, with so many different masters to serve. How do you go about allocating resources? You know, you talk about the kind of emergence of Instagram the last probably, what, maybe 8 to 15 months, with it really becoming a bigger priority, for rightfully so. But, you know, if you're getting the best conversions to a sale for tickets through a targeted e-blast or you know, a really targeted Facebook ad, you know, how do you guys allocate resources, allocate time across different platforms? Kind of what dictates that? How numerically driven is it? How is it anecdotally driven? And how is just kind of what's working across sports, across the league?
Yeah, I think, and for me as well, I dive into the data with me, Michael Bobian, and Sam Benavides, who's also a coordinator you know, with the club and digital. So we take time through Google Double Publisher for website purposes. Mm-hmm. We take a look at Shareably and as well as some of the Facebook insights, Instagram now a lot better with its analytics.
Yep.
And we do take time every week to look at what did well, and, you know, this post, this initiative, this video, this kind of like, for instance, like celebrating National Burrito Day, like how did fans, you know, how were they receptive to this kind of funny, wacky content? How many people viewed the video, you know, how many people, you know, just basic analytics like that. Mm-hmm. And also in terms of video content, we can talk about, you know, that we link to ticketing, are people clicking the link to buy tickets or to look at our match guide? Like, is this video we're putting out, is it kind of giving, enticing people to kind of click the ticket but you know what I mean? Just kind of taking them to maybe to buy and all that stuff. So no, we definitely take time, and it's definitely routine. And every month we get analytics from the league, from MLS on the best teams and how they performed on each platform, and page views for website. And so it's definitely a big initiative for us to really look at our analytics, to look at how we compare, you know, with the league. And just, again, biggest thing for us too is selling tickets and keeping our fans engaged, and that's a big thing for us. And every week it's kind of case by case. And this week coming up, we host the Houston Dynamo. Historically, we don't sell well for that game. You know, what can we do on the digital side to ensure that we're kind of getting our fans' best interest and keeping them informed and wanting to come to this game and to, you know, to support the club. So it definitely, it's week by week basis. And I think we have a good routine going for that. Yeah.
I think we have this conversation all the time where it's, you know, we know that the end goal is to sell tickets, to get a click on ticket link, to get a sale of a ticket. But it's never really linear. It's, you know, it's not a lot. There's not a lot of last click attribution. I mean, we're always looking at last click attribution, I guess you could say. But, you know, that Facebook Live or Facebook Watch video they may watch, or that YouTube show, you know, may inspire them to click on ticket link later. I guess, first off, do you guys see the numbers kind of work in tandem? Like, when you guys have a really good week on social, will the ticket links perform better then? And whether they're posted first or last, or they have the seventh post of the week. And then also, a second part of that question, I guess, is are you guys seeking actively to try and combat that last click attribution, trying to see, does our engaged social media audience ultimately buy more tickets, or is it more, you know, you know that the correlation is there, but aren't necessarily putting the time and resources because you don't have it to go dive that deeply?
Yeah, definitely. So I think when we win, our fan base, and it's with every fan base, they love when you win. And we see that in our social numbers, digital, our conversion rates, anything we post that say after a win does well. And, you know, vice versa, if we lose, our engagement definitely does suffer. And I'm sure so many clubs and teams in digital can attest to that. But I think for us, we really take advantage after a win, after a good result. What can we put in front of our fans to A, inform them about this upcoming game, and to B, inform them about what we just did in our previous game, and C, provide them with, you know, engaging content, stuff that gets them excited for this upcoming game. And we work really close with ticketing, ticket sales to accomplish those goals. And, you know, we definitely get good click, you know, conversion rates for that as well. But yeah, what was the second question again?
Yeah, man, I'm sorry. I guess it's how much can you really spend the time to look at you see all those studies, the average Facebook fan for the Earthquake spends, you know, $5 more per week than the non-Facebook fan, or, you know, or someone that watches a YouTube video at least once a day. There's so many different ways that you can try to correlate social media success with ultimately sales success outside of the basic click here to buy and someone clicks. How much can you guys really effort to produce those insights, or is it more just, you know, kind of trying to just drive the numbers up overall because you know there's a positive correlation in there somewhere?
I think it's more of the latter, kind of driving just more content. We basically, for us, we do use tracking links. We definitely promote a lot of our stuff on Facebook because of the algorithm. Excuse me, kind of gets lost with our messaging with our fans. But you know, we rely heavily on email marketing as well, kind of getting our message out, email blast to season ticket holders, hoping that they come as well. That's a massive part for us, conversion rate for season ticket holders. But I think it kind of it goes to that extent, and then also the basic analytics of, hey, how many people are clicking on these links, how many people are engaging with past video, or how many page views are we getting for our match guide, which kind of houses all of our information. I think that's the extent we kind of go with, where we kind of analyze and see where we kind of get our best numbers from that.
But. And it goes hand in hand. I mean, if you guys have a lot of people watching a Facebook video, going to your website, that's going to increase the amount of that custom audience that you're building from website visits, from Facebook engagements, that will ultimately lead to better conversions on ads, and you have that nice happy circle, and you're going to get that last click in a more efficient manner than you would have otherwise. So it's certainly not mutually exclusive, as much as people tend to throw up their hands and say there's no way to measure social media ROI. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say too, we really rely heavily on web ads for our website. Mm-hmm. We have the leaderboard banners where across the league, people work with sponsors and putting just kind of sponsored content in the leaderboard for their web ad. For the Quakes, our philosophy is everything on the top in terms of web ads is ticket-based, is Quakes. It's just all Quakes. So it could be match guy clicks a match guy. It could be here, click here for a ticket, mm-hmm. click here for our Fireworks 4-pack. So we look at the top of our website as well as just very ticket-driven. And then that's our main focus. So again, just to add to that point, that on our website, we really kind of drive our fans to a match guide, a ticket link, a 4-pack, just to make sure they're informed and know that, hey, if you go to the Quakes website, you're going to see consistently match information as well as ticket information.
Where is your website traffic tend to be coming from? I'm sure a lot of it is content driven, watch this video or marketing driven as well. Are you guys finding that are Google ads or Google organic driving most of it? Is social media, actively dipping with all the algorithm changes? What's that traffic look like in terms of referrals?
So yeah, our website, probably we do not get as much traffic as we'd like, I'd say. I think we rely heavily on social media as well as our email marketing to drive fans to mm-hmm. our website. But what we push out on social media, you'll also find on our website as well. So we kind of go hand in hand what we do on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube as well. That can be found on our website. In addition, we have what I mentioned before, match guide pages, which basically has gates opening, food trucks, match giveaway, traffic, parking.
And are fans getting to those? Are fans getting those more so from Twitter or more so from in social media, email, or are you finding that it's like they're searching, sounds like earthquakes, whatever match guide or match information, and they're getting there that way, or are they going to actually going to soundslikeearthquakes.com and just actually going to the website as anachronistic as that sounds?
So I would say we get more referrals from the social media and email marketing more so than going directly to soundslikeearthquakes.com. So that's kind of the route our fans usually take. We definitely have some that go directly to our website, our homepage, but I think it is because of our social media presence and for our successful email marketing strategy where we kind of drive fans to our homepage, and that's more of the route our fans take, I'd say.
And you guys have, there's certainly, as you mentioned, a lot of great content on the website in addition to the content you're sharing natively on social, and I'm sure it's always an evolving question, and it has been in your 3.5 seasons there, that what do we do? Do we share a clip of this? I mean, do you guys have, the new show you started this year with a lot of your players and as well as your broadcasters, and you have the option to allow them to watch it all on Facebook, maybe share a snippet and tell them to watch the rest on the website where you can, get more ability to track them or whatnot and get them from more ticket buying messages. So is that a conversation that actively happens, or do you realize that, we're going to go where fans are, they want to engage on social, we're going to give them the whole cake and boodle on social, or is it more, we can use this to drive traffic to our website because we know that fans get a taste and they'll come back for everything, we can start to train them to engage more on our website, not just see it as a match information or ticket buying place?
No, I think it's a balance of both. We do want to provide readily content right for our fans, and we want to appease them by doing that. But we also see the benefit, as you mentioned, kind of driving people back to the website for ticket opportunities and just more information on the web that they won't get necessarily on social media. As you mentioned, we started a huge new content series with Jimmy Conrad, a big digital personality, the former player, Joe Cannon, a former player for us, Hall of Famer. We started a video series, What Would Jimmy and Joe Do?
Well done,
it's a funny, wacky, content piece. I don't know if you've seen the first episode, but very, very lighthearted, funny. But these are longer pieces. So these could be to 10 to 11 minutes long. In that nature, you know, we all meet as a digital team saying, hey, yeah, we can put maybe 10 minutes of it on Twitter, which is kind of the limit.
Right.
Or we can cut this off, a good piece of the video, and direct people back to our website to see more. You know, click here for the full video, essentially. And then on this video page for the full video, we have helpful information in regards to the upcoming game,
right,
as well as, hey, if you want to buy tickets, here you go. But that's definitely a big conversation for us, is taking the original content pieces, cutting it down, and redirecting fans back to our website. And to kind of add to that as well, we've added a Danger and Danielle tactical breakdown, which is basically our broadcast team breaking down and analyzing the game from the previous week and what the team did well and what they can do better. It's very heavy on soccer information and tactics, but we also cut that up as well, and we direct fans back to the website. So similar strategy for both of those new content pieces, you know, in an effort to drive more fans to our website, where there's so much information that can help them out.
Yeah, it's such an evolving paradigm and question with, fans right now. You know that casual fans are constantly scrolling their feeds on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and you want them to be able to discover your content and, you know, engage with it. But there's also the notion of, you know, if I'm a fan and I'm bored, I might open my Instagram app, I might go to sjearthquakes.com and see what content's up there. I might go to the SJ Earthquakes app and see what new content's available. So, you know, it's about kind of training fans a little bit, but also not forgetting that social is where you can kind of get that more accidental exposure. You can get that more organic sharing. So it's certainly a balance, and there's no right or wrong answer. We could do a whole episode just talking about, you know, where to put your content and how much to give away, quote unquote, versus driving fans to your own platform for them to see it. But go for it, Paul.
Sorry, just one more point to that. For Instagram story as well, we're kind of utilizing the Instagram stories more and more often, and I think that you see a lot of professional sports teams doing the same, where, you know, we're always there and consistent and available on our Instagram story. Once you open your app, our goal is that you see the Quakes logo and story always there.
Yeah.
So if you click that, you can see, you know, here's highlights, swipe up to watch the full video, Jimmy and Joe, what would Jimmy and Joe do, watch the full episode. So we're trying to utilize Instagram stories, the swipe up feature, if you will, to get more fans to our website. And we've found a lot of success with that.
No, I mean, it's so powerful to think about. Like, yeah, a tweet from a fan is one thing, and maybe they'll catch you in their Facebook feed when they're scrolling, but there were so many people opening up Instagram every day, and the fact that that piece of real estate, that if you put the work in, you can be front and center every single day when they open up their app, and, you know, they're engaging with you on a daily basis and just part of their lives, part of their identity. And, you know, it's certainly very, very powerful, and that's a great point you make there for sure. But I did want to touch a little bit on the first off, having a great conversation with Paul Dewhurst, digital marketing strategist for the San Jose Earthquakes. I think, you know, we might have to have a second episode because we have so much more to talk about. I did want to touch a little bit on the Bay Area itself. You know, you and I were talking about the San Jose Sharks a little bit before this call, with them starting the Stanley Cup playoffs. Obviously, you have the, I guess we can call them 1.5 football teams with the Raiders on their way out, the Oakland Athletics, San Francisco Giants. So, and there's so much going on there, and so many different options, let alone the cities themselves, San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, or whatnot in the Bay Area. So, you know, from a brand and marketing perspective, what is the San Jose Earthquakes brand, and how do you guys seek to sort of stand out among the crowd, whether that be against other pro sports teams or other MLS clubs in general?
Yeah, definitely. And I think our new president, Tom Fox, kind of put it the best way: in such a crowded Bay Area market, we don't want to be like a Bud Light or a Coors Light, if you will. We want to be more of a craft beer. I think we want that to be our message almost, that we're not like the Niners and the Warriors, who all of these Bay Area teams, I got to say, they do an amazing job of covering their teams, keeping their fans informed, and they do a great job in their own right. But I think with the Quakes, we have to look at it a bit differently, and MLS a bit differently, because were not as popular as the NBA or NFL, NHL, and MLB, but we have to be proud of what we are and speak to our fans in a way that only the Quakes can. And a big thing we're doing in marketing this year is our We Are San Jose campaign. Mm-hmm. A big conversation for the Quakes in general has always been, you know, are we the Bays team? Are we, you know, are we reaching the San Francisco market? Are we reaching the North Bay? Are we reaching the Palo Altos and the Oaklands? And we've always tried to battle that. But this year, and credit to our marketing team for coming up with this tagline, but We Are San Jose, really being proud of what we're doing in the San Jose and the South Bay community that has such a rich history in sports, in soccer specifically. And with that marketing tagline, we're really doing a lot of content around being proud of you know, what the South Bay and what San Jose is all about. A lot of player features, a lot of fan stories, neighborhood nights, which we're promoting every week. Basically, we kind of quake up a city in the South Bay, which means, you know, basically a lot of grassroots marketing of dropping off Quakes memorabilia, informing fans about upcoming games, and doing a lot of that digital marketing and promotion through that. So really galvanizing the San Jose and South Bay community. And I think that's one way we're kind of being different from other teams in the Bay Area this year specifically. And I think as well, you know, on top of that, it's also reaching out to fans differently and to speaking to them in a different way than maybe the Warriors are or the Niners. Like we have a special relationship with our fans on Twitter specifically. We have a great following, and they're always engaged, and we relate to them in ways, and we're always responding to them. And I think just being an organization where they can come to us for information and not feel like we're this big corporation, which, you know, maybe the Warriors or the Niners may come off as, because they have these, you know, larger-than-life figures in the Kevin Durant and Steph Curry's. But for us, we kind of want to be that professional, respectable organization, but also tend to our fans' needs that maybe other teams can't afford to do, or, you know, maybe it's not part of the brand that they're trying to get out there. So, it's a constant battle, and I think we're doing a great job, and we're making a lot of strides in this region.
Yeah, I mean, it's so well said. I mean, you look at like a team like the Warriors, and they do a tremendous job on their digital social, but they're also spending time looking at building up their fan base in China, you know, and maybe aren't quite as concerned about the you know, the community next door, but maybe they are. But I think it's, you know, the fact that you guys are a newer team, and overall, looking at the successful MLS clubs, that they are focused more on building up a true, you know, I grassroots is the wrong term, but, you know, building up more super fans, more highly engaged fans, and as opposed to the ones that might, you know, wear Kevin Durant's shoes, so they are aware of the Warriors and going to go to a game. But I think it's, you know, looking at those tribes, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, you look at some of the fan organizations, the booster groups, and maybe it's starting to try to build up those fans more and more, help them be your grassroots marketing team in the community themselves, just kind of voluntarily. And I'm sure you're always after the casual fan as well, trying to convert them. But, you know, how do you guys kind of look at the type of fan you're trying to produce? Are you going after the fan that may be a general sports fan that, you know, maybe doesn't know about the Earthquakes, or is it looking at the soccer communities and trying, or I guess it's a really loaded question of looking at how you guys approach, you know, fan development and, you know, where the super fans come in versus the, you know, the ones that maybe have never been to a Quakes game.
Yeah, and there's such a big spectrum with that too, because you have your doesn't know anything about soccer type fan. You have your casual fan, which you kind of mentioned, and then you have your diehard European. I want to say snob, but there's people who know soccer in Europe, who are Americans, but know like the European game, who don't want to give MLS the time of day because they don't like the quality of it. So you really have three different groups that you're trying to work with, and I think each of those, you know, for the casual fan, you know, you want to put a good product on the field, but you also want to have a good game day experience. With the fans who never come to our games, I think Avaya Stadium, if, you know, whoever's listening, you guys should definitely come out. Great stadium. It has the largest outdoor bar in North America. which we promote and which we really voice on our channels as well. And that appeases them as well as just a good night on the town. And then as well as for the people who may know a lot about soccer but aren't convinced the Quakes are kind of worth their time, you know, we kind of go into creating good, appealing content as well as highlighting the fact that, hey, Magnus Eriksson, for example, today is up for goal of the week. Look at this amazing goal he just scored, and kind of pushing content towards them that are saying, hey, you know, the Quakes, we're not bad as well. We have pretty good quality. And to that point, the NBA and these NFLs, they don't have to go up against the Premier Leagues and the La Ligas, and they're their own entity. But soccer is interesting in its well because the play, you have to compare it to different things around the world, different leagues. So that's always a struggle, I think, for MLS in general. And just one more point too. One thing that we are probably a little different for these fans and our perception is we have 4 homegrown players on our team who are professional players for the first team. So homegrown meaning they are from the Bay Area and we have signed them professionally. So while Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are playing for the Warriors, they're not necessarily from the Bay Area.
Right.
But you come look at us, you can see Nick Lima, Tommy Thompson, 2 of the guys come to mind, feature for the first team every weekend. And it's something that this community, this proud sports community, can look up to and say, like, wow, my son can be this Nick Lima. It's attainable.
Yeah.
And I think that's what MLS in general, and San Jose does a good job of is, you know, we breed some really great professional soccer players, and they're on showcase every Saturday night. So, you know, it's definitely something that we try and promote as well, that, hey, we have some Bay Area homegrown kids featuring for the Quakes. So kind of a cool situation.
Oh, totally. Not to mention their homegrown digital marketing strategist.
There you go. Exactly. We got a homegrown team here. So,
speaking of that, just one more quick thing for you, this little shareable stat. You know, you guys do a good job, and I know from speaking to you, and also just from this conversation today, that you guys are intentionally working to endear your players more with like the series, like What Would Jimmy Do, and I'd love to hear kind of how intentional that is, like of really making sure that fans do. You know, selling the sport is one thing, but getting fans to really fall in love with your players is so important, and it can certainly cannot be understated. And so was that a really big part of the conversation this past off season, and something that you guys really made sure that team operations buy into, the players buy into it, that they know why they're doing something like What Would Jimmy Do, and how important it is to help fans get to know them off the pitch.
Yeah, and I think MLS and the Quakes in general, for us to have success, we need to build the brands of our players. And I always kind of compare to the NFL and to the NBA, but these guys, Jimmy Garoppolo, the Kevin Durant, they have their own brands. Mm-hmm. For us, people may not know who Florian Youngworth is, who is, you know, in the Quake circles is a massively popular player for us, but he's not super well known. But we kind of cultivate and hone in his personality on our social media channels. And it's almost like he does the work for us. Some of these players kind of do the work for us because Zlatan Ibrahimovic just signed with the Galaxy. It was major news across the league.
Yeah.
Florian Youngworth, I don't know if you guys saw this, but he kind of photoshopped his head on a god, and Zlatan was photoshopped onto a devil, and it was almost like this arm wrestling like match. And basically, Flo's message was, "I can't wait to play against you. We're gonna have some great battles." But it's this ridiculous, funny, like no other player would do something like that. But that's Florian Youngworth. He built his personality, and that's what's unique about our situation too. And the players get that, and we've kind of established that over the last couple years. Quakes Access, which our video team does a fantastic job of a behind-the-scenes Access video. And we go behind the scenes and follow these players in pretty high-intense situations in the locker room, and kind of covering a game day. So they're kind of trained almost now to have cameras in their face, and they yeah. understand the behind the scenes aspect and how important it is to build their own brand. But it, you know, I got to credit the, you know, the coaching staff, the general manager, for allowing some of this stuff to happen. And it, the content's better for that. You know, if we build these guys' brand on video, or if it's a cool written story, we tell the story of these players that a lot of these guys don't know about. So when they run on the pitch on Saturday, you can look at Flo running onto the pitch and say, okay, I know more about him now because of the content, you know, the club had pushed out. So now I feel more of an attachment right. to him when he scores a goal and he celebrates. You know, you kind of feel like you're one. So yeah, so that, totally. That's a long way to answer your question, but that's kind of how it's been kind of with the club for the past couple of years.
No, that's great. And I'm about to get into a terrible stat, and it's about esports. So I did want to get really quickly 30 seconds from you on what MLS is doing with esports, with the EMLS Cup, I guess they're calling it. And give me the quick rundown of that, of how the league has communicated to the clubs.
Yeah, it's a massive initiative from MLS. Cali SCG, he is our EMLS player. He was just in Boston at the EMLS first EMLS Cup, and Sam Benavides, who is our digital coordinator, was with him over the weekend. He didn't advance to the finals, but he had a great showing. But for MLS, they really message out, you know, the importance of building the brands of our EMLS players, and really make it an initiative for our content to include and to build the brand of what MLS is trying to do on the digital side.
Yeah.
And there's a call every week where they kind of go over what's going on, what's new with the MLS. And we host friendlies, and they encourage us to work with other clubs to host friendlies with, let's say, the Columbus Crew. So yeah. Our player will play their rep. So it's been a nice thing they're building with the league, and you know, obviously this weekend was a kind of a testament to that for sure.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. I appreciate you sharing that. All right, well, we'll get to the shareable stat, but don't worry, we're gonna have a little more fun with Paul in our starting 11 segment, and we'll be right back with our shareable stat and then starting 11.
Really enjoyed my conversation with Paul Dewhurst, a smart guy, creative guy, and it's really fun to learn about how the Earthquakes and MLS team works. But we'll have more fun coming up with Paul in our Starting 11 segment, but first, this episode's Shareable Stat. This episode's Shareable Stat comes from the recent NBA 2K League official draft. So as you may know, the NBA is creating their own esports league for the NBA 2K game, and they had, I believe it was 16 teams involved that each drafted from a pool of players to get the competition started. And the draft, of course, was streamed live on Twitch. And the simple shareable stat is that 650,000, as of this taping, 650,000 fans tuned in to at least a little bit of the draft. And when I checked in early on in the draft, there was about 20 to 30,000 concurrent viewers. But 650,000 overall tuned into a little bit of it. And that, to be honest, probably pales in comparison to the majority of what you see in esports. But it's a good auspicious start for the NBA trying to add another brand, another offshoot of their content to be able to ultimately monetize. Esports is certainly catching a lot of attention these days for a good reason. Perhaps a little premature in its full mature monetization, that is. But the NBA knows there's something there. And they're taking their intellectual property, in this case their sport, their players, their personalities, and their ability to market their sport, and are creating another revenue stream for themselves with the NBA 2K League. And they're learning about esports, they're studying fan habits, that, you know, hence the streaming on Twitch for the official draft. And soon enough, they're going to be treating it like another offshoot for their club. You know, partnerships, training, it's already starting to play out right now, and it'll be interesting to see how it matures over time. And all of a sudden, the NBA may have themselves another nice little side hustle to supplement the millions and millions of dollars they're making, billions even, with the media rights deals from the actual game on the court. So that's this little shareable stat. Definitely something to think about. You know, how can you create a little side hustle, perhaps with esports? We're already seeing the MLS do some stuff as well, and other leagues are not too far away. It's just a matter of really learning from the NBA now and seeing, you know, how they succeed and how they ultimately maximize that hand. All right, that's what's a little show will set. 650,000 fans tune into at least a little bit of the NBA 2K League draft, and we'll definitely be interested to see where it goes. All right, we'll be right back now to go with our starting 11 segment with Paul Dewhurst of the San Jose Earthquakes.
All right, back from this episode of Shareable Stat, joined once again by Paul Dewhurst, digital marketing strategist with the San Jose Earthquakes. Paul, had an awesome time in your interview. You scored a goal. You did everything you could possibly do on the pitch and to earn another start next time. Are you now ready to...
Coach, I appreciate it. I'm excited. I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Are you now ready to play a little starting 11?
I've been waiting for it. I've been waiting patiently. Let's do it.
You're officially in. All right, number one for you. You played a little bit of soccer. So I want to know this is a two-part question. Your favorite way to see a goal scored or to score a goal. So one, as a player, what was your favorite way to score? You know, header, set play, volley, whatever you want to call it. And then also your favorite way to see a goal scored as a digital manager. You know, what's gonna do the best on digital and social?
So for me personally, as a player, I love to score. I'm a center back, you know, by nature. So yeah. I love to kind of, off the set piece, snapping header, upper corner. So, that's my favorite as a player. In social digital, the volleys just do so well. Those kind of run of play, classy goals, just those screamers, that, if you will. Those do the best for us. So,
oh, yeah.
It's got to be the volley.
Very nice. And, of course, we saw Cristiano Ronaldo recently with his ridiculous bicycle kick. And those are crazy. All right.
The bicycle kicks work too. Those work too.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, number two for you. I want to know and you mentioned this earlier, so we might have heard a little bit of it. So the platform you think the Earthquakes do the best on, and why or how is that?
I'd say Twitter because, you know, we showcase our voice a bit. I think we have more content options with video, with just more organic, funny, entertaining content. But I think Instagram, we're starting to build up. Starting to have more of a presence there, but I think Twitter kind of takes the cake there.
Gotcha. Good stuff. And I've been enjoying following you guys on Twitter for sure. It's definitely the platform where voice is formed, and there's no doubt about that. All right, number three for you. This is a loaded question, so answer however you see the best. Your number one key for an effective digital marketing strategy. What is that one thing that you kind of keep close to your heart?
I think just staying true to the brand for the Quakes, and I think we have a proud history in being kind of staying true to the We Are San Jose and kind of being, relating to the fan base. I think that's kind of big in our brand study, where you have some clubs that are super outlandish and try and break the internet, every week. But for us, I think we kind of stay true to our brand, respectable, producing good content, and kind of that's the major key for us, and that's kind of been the case for the past 3 years.
No, it's well put, and I think it's easy to pay lip service to it, but sometimes people just toss out the brand for a few cheap clicks or cheap retweets just because they want to go viral, and it just dilutes what you guys have worked to stand for. All right, number four for you. I want to know the non-MLS club and non-Bay Area club, so you don't have to pick one of your neighbors. Does the best job on social media, and why? So non-MLS team / non-Bay Area team does the best job on social media.
Yeah, I've been a huge fan of the Portland Trail Blazers and what they do on social media. I know a lot of them have moved on. I know TJ Ansley, I think, is now with the Blue Jackets. Yeah. Cody Sherritt, now with the Minnesota Timberwolves, but in the past couple of years, they've done some really fun stuff, and they've been a great follow for me. And something where I kind of look at what they did and kind of take some notes and learn and see how what the Quakes can do, kind of similar to their content and kind of how they leave their mark on social media. So
no, a great answer there. You'll get no disagreement from me. They're a great follow. And yeah, Dwayne Hankins there still overseeing everything, and TJ, of course, got his original chops in the MLS with the Crew, so good people there for sure. All right.
Definitely.
Number five for you. I want to know, soccer's all about tradition. There's so many great traditions in sports, but football and soccer in particular. What is your favorite Earthquakes tradition?
Wow, favorite Earthquakes tradition. So I don't know if you guys know, Crazy George, he's the inventor of the wave. And he He started in the 70s at San Jose State Spartan Stadium. And if you guys don't know, he's as old, he's like 70 years old, wacky, and he's crazy for a reason. And before every game, for every kickoff, we do an earthquakes chant in the stadium. So basically, he has this drum, he bangs it, and he encourages the fans from each side of the stadium to complete the chant, Earth, you know, one side Earth, the other side Quake.
Yeah.
And it's funny seeing this old man just firing people up, and he's pointing to one side, and they say Earth, and he points to the other side, and they say Quake. So it's this funny, wacky, kind of out-of-mind kind of tradition, but fans in San Jose love it, because it's like San Jose, it's what they grew up watching as their kids, and for these kids in the 70s who come back to the games now, and Crazy George is still there doing this tradition. And it's such a cool experience. If you ever come up to a game, definitely something you'll remember.
Oh, I love that. That's really what it's all about, making that truly great atmosphere when you feel goosebumps because you're there and you hear the call and recite chants. Those are the best. That sounds like a lot of fun. All right. What number are we on? We're number 6 here. I want to know your favorite piece of content that you've worked on during your time with the Earthquakes. So that piece of content, whether it went viral or not, or whatever you want to call it, it's the one that was really fun to work on.
So this is kind of a, we continue to do this, but Quake's Axis has been a big thing for our digital content. It's really opened so many doors and avenues for our fans. And basically, it's a behind-the-scenes feature video series where we let fans into the locker room and let them into conversations between the players and coaches, and kind of building our players' brands, and, you know, through this video piece. But I think just launching that, helping launch it with our great video team, and kind of continuing that. I was in Tucson this preseason with the team, and a big part of my job was to shoot video for Quake's Axis. And just kind of telling that story of the team on the road, meeting the new players and kind of introducing fans to kind of this different preseason routine. And I'd say Quake's Axis is probably my favorite and continues to be my favorite thing that I work on.
No, it sounds like a lot of fun and a great initiative from the club that goes a long way. All right, I want to put yourself in a fan's shoes now. So tell me your favorite, most memorable sports event that you've been able to attend as a fan.
Oh boy, that's tough. I'm a big NBA fan. Love the NBA. Massive fan of that. One I've attended. I can't think of one off the top of my head. But one of the recent ones I've been to that kind of stands out. The whole Jimmy Garoppolo hype that it's been happening towards the end of the season. I was at the Niner-Titans game where they kind of won off the field goal last minute, and Jimmy G kind of pushed the offense through, and just kind of continuing that crazy winning streak. I was in attendance for that, and it was just one of those amazing moments in sports where you just kind of look back and like, how did this happen? And I'd say the one that comes to mind first is Jimmy G. Comeback win, but I have so many NBA games. I usually watch them on TV, but I usually don't go to a lot of NBA games, I'd say. So the ones I can tell you, the ones I've seen on TV that are my favorite, but other than that, the Jimmy G one stands out for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean, Jimmy G has definitely become an overnight sensation there in San Francisco, and you'll have to get him in a Quake jersey soon enough so you can ride some of that wave as well.
No, we got to, man, we have to.
Love it. All right, number 8 for you. Everyone knows the Bay Area for a lot of things. Food is one of them. So tell me, I guess, maybe, I don't know, I could be way off there. Tell me if I go up to the Bay Area, if I go up to San Francisco, Oakland, wherever it may be, what's the best food to get up there? Where do I have to go?
No, you hit it right on the head. The Bay Area has so much good food, a lot of cultures. I'm going to give a shout out to one of my favorite kind of Hispanic Honduran food places. In San Jose, Maya's Kitchen. It specializes in Honduran dishes, and the owner is a massive Quakes fan. And we've had some Honduran players in the past playing for us, and we've had a very close connection with that restaurant. They amazing food, amazing service. It's definitely, if you're in the South Bay specifically, so I'm going to stay true to the We Are San Jose, kind of tagline here. So if you're in San Jose, go to Maya's Kitchen. It's a must have when you're here.
What's Honduran food? Give me a quick idea. Like, is it like kind of like Spanish food, Mexican food, rice, tortillas?
Yeah, kind of similar to Mexican food. There's a lot of similarities there. They have kind of this Honduran breakfast where they have the plantains and they have the beans and this like specialized Honduran cheese they have. So they, yes. You know, I can go for days here on kind of describing them. I'm getting hungry just talking about it, but it's similar to the Mexican food, and it's definitely a must have. It's definitely a great time there.
No, I love the recommendation. Definitely a good one. I want to check out next time we're up there. All right, number nine. This is just kind of off the wall a little bit. Tell me the coolest place you've ever traveled, and kind of what's at the top of your list for a place you have not been able to travel to yet. Just as a world traveler, or a country traveler, however you want to look at it.
Yeah, for sure. My family, my parents are from England, from Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, I have a bunch of family back in England. So this is kind of like a sports nut answer here, but yeah. Old Trafford, Manchester United Stadium. I went there a few times, It's just such a magical place. I can't explain it. I'm talking, I'm a Manchester United fan, but if you haven't been there, Old Trafford, and experienced a Premier League game at the Theatre of Dreams, as they call it, it's definitely a must to go. And then somewhere I'd like to go, Barcelona. Would love to go to Barcelona and catch a game there, but also kind of visit that beautiful city, you know, on the coast there, and learn more about their tradition. And I'd have to say Barcelona.
That's a good one for sure. I have been to the stadium there in Barcelona. I can highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun, and I would love to go to Old Trafford.
Nice.
That'd be really cool to go to Old Trafford for sure. So love that answer. Love the sports angle to it as well. And I guess go Manchester United. All right.
Go United. Great win this past weekend. So.
Oh, definitely. Number 10 for you. I want to know, while the United States is not in it, and we're all upset about that, who's your World Cup pick for this summer?
It's got to be – people are going to give me so much for this, but I'd have to say England. Three Lions, baby. obviously, I just mentioned, right, my parents are from England.
Homer.
I have family. haven't won since 1966, but hey, we're going to end the drought. They're due, man. So I'd have to say England. And, no bias there whatsoever.
Put your money on the Three Lions and England to take home the cup in the World Cup this year. They're going to shock the world. But hey, they have a chance. They're in the tournament. And the U.S. was as well. we could probably have another 5-10 minute conversation on the implications, you know, good and bad for the MLS with the U.S. not making it. But we'll save that for another time, I guess.
loaded topic there. Topic, but for sure.
All right, last one for you in the starting 11, Paul. Tell me the player with the biggest personality on the Earthquakes, and also the name we should all look out for to emerge season. Who's kind of the person we should be watching out for? So biggest personality and kind of the dark horse that who's going to make it big this year.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of mentioned before, Florian Youngworth. He is probably our biggest personality on and off the field. He's a fan favorite. He's a must follow on social media. So organic. It's him all the way. And Florian Youngworth for sure. And then player to emerge, he's kind of emerged last year, but he's kind of starting to come into his own again. Nick Lima, he is a homegrown player from Castro Valley in the Bay Area. Such a talented player, such a good kid, comes from a good family. Definitely someone to watch out, Nick Lima, not only for the Quakes, but you'll see him at the national team level for sure. Hopefully,
Very nice. Hopefully
bringing the U.S. back to the World Cup. So.
Ah, there we go. That's the name to watch out for sure. All right, Paul, you kicked ass and you're starting 11. We hammered home a lot of topics. Now your chance to take over the podcast a little bit and tell us your social media all-star to follow, whether it's someone on Twitter, who they are, and why they're worth following.
Someone to follow, just like a digital personality?
Could be. We've had different answers on the show. We've had comedy answers. We've had, you know, really good social insights. We've had just friends and family. So it's just your chance to take over the podcast.
My chance, huh? yeah, I'd say besides me, besides following me, no, I'm just
naturally.
Cody Sherritt, he's someone, and this is a real answer here. He also worked in MLS. He worked for Columbus Crew as well. Worked for the Blazers, and now he's working for the Timberwolves. He's such a fun follow, such a funny personality. Go follow him, and he's doing some good things in Minnesota.
Ah, that's a good one for sure. Minnesota's building a nice little digital social powerhouse up there, so they're going to be a team to watch in the NBA for sure. And Nat Wright starting right now, even. All right, Paul, and tell us, you're a good follow. Tell us yourself. Where do we follow you, and where can we find all things Earthquakes on digital and social?
Yeah, follow the Quakes first and foremost. At SJ Earthquakes on Twitter, Instagram. Follow us on Snapchat. Obviously, follow us anywhere. But you know, if you want to give me a follow on Twitter @Dewhurst_Paul. And then on Instagram, Dahl Poohurst is my Instagram name, for better or for worse. So go follow the Quakes, go follow me, and we're excited about the content we're pushing out, and you won't be disappointed. So give us a follow.
Yeah, I definitely do recommend following the Quakes and all over the place, because you guys are doing some cool stuff, and it's really, really worth looking into. And you guys, you're not just talk. Like, what we talked about today is very much what I see playing out in the content. You are getting to know the players, that We Are San Jose branding really is strengthening. And whether you guys are winning or losing on and off the pitch, that the game is strong on social and digital, and you have a major hand to play in that. So thanks a lot for coming on the podcast today, and we appreciate you giving us some of your time, especially during the busy season. And we will all be rooting for the Quakes to make some noise in the MLS this season.
Appreciate it, Neil. I really appreciate the time, and hope we can do it again soon.
Oh, no doubt. We can talk this forever. I'll have to come up there and catch a game, and then we'll be in business.
We have the longest outdoor bar in North America. Come out, man.
You have me right there.
All right. Sounds good.
Cut. Good shit, man. Oh, that was fun. That was a fun little closing segment, too. All right.
Dude, I could do that all day, man. I could do that all day.
Thanks so much again to Paul Dewhurst, digital marketing strategist for the San Jose Earthquakes. I really appreciate him taking the time, especially during the club season, to take us inside and the Quakes a little bit, and to learn a little bit about himself and all the stuff he does for the organization. But that was it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening. I am your trusty host, Neil Horwitz. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well as on Twitter, NJH287. And, of course, check out the podcast and other content at dsmsports.net. And always find us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher Radio. All right, until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.